the Solicitors Podcast. I'm joined by Izaz Ali, who is a solicitor advocate. My name is Owen, and I'm a trainee solicitor here at Laudit. Today, we're going to be talking about asset and share purchases of companies. So, Izaz, would you like to start us off? What's the background to entering into this sort of agreement?
Yeah, so I thought it'd be prudent if we talk about what we're dealing with live right now. In terms of both of those arrangements, so either an asset sale or a share sale or purchase, it really dependent on the circumstances of each case and the advice clients get from accountant tax advisors as to the method of disposal for them, and that would dictate which way they go. Also, you'd need to factor in the purchaser's thought process as to whether they want to acquire all the sort of history and everything else to do with the company, because if they went for a share purchase, it'd also take on all of the history of that company, including all the sort of former issues and liabilities and any sort of skeletons in the cupboard, so to speak. So there's a whole host of sort of factors that go into it, and I think that in itself is worthy of a separate podcast between us, just to sort of drill down. And you know, we could separate a share purchase and or sale and an asset purchase or sale, but perhaps just sort of go through an overview on this one.
Yeah, of course. So the key things are, obviously there's going to be some form of consideration. So
yeah,
company will offer a certain amount to acquire the other company. So then it comes up what's actually being acquired. So in some circumstances, you're acquiring the current lease of a premises, if the parties has a office space that they're using or a shop. And then are you also acquiring their IP rights, their name? That could be another option. Are the purchasers going to become directors of the company? Or are they going to be a parent company instead? What kind of employees are transferred over, and if they are, and then the certain protections that you kind of need to cover for them employees?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, all of what you set out is absolutely true. So taking in turn, consideration doesn't necessarily mean money changing hands. It could be shares in the parent company for them to swallow up the new target company that they're acquiring. It can mean a form of debt in the company, so someone can sell and have a payout over X number of years. Any key people in the company could be on a package which will give them an earn out over a couple of years. So there's a whole host of sort of options available to both purchaser and seller, and it's really down to a meeting of the minds, really, just to sort of look at the cash flow of the business, look at what the purchaser wants out of this and what the sellers want out of it. Do they want to sort of sell up and sail into the sunset, or do they want to sell up now but still be involved in the business, you know, actively or non-actively over the next X number of years? Does it suit them financially to be paid out in one go, and can the purchaser afford it, or does it suit them to be paid out over sort of the next sort of 3 tax years? And if they are being paid out over the next few years, what protections have they got in place? How can they ensure that they've protected and they get paid out over the next few years? So a whole host of considerations in relation to that. You mentioned employees. That's another very, very key area, because there's some key legislation in place to protect employees of a target company. That's in the form of transfer of undertakings, protection of employment. And that effectively says, in really, really simple terms, that if a company is being acquired, the employees in that company are protected and they transfer across to the acquiring company. So you've got to be very, very careful there. And in terms of negotiations, sometimes there is at the outset negotiations, and if there's some synergy in a company acquiring another company and wanting to bring in-house the accounting function or the marketing function or the sales function, etc., then there may be some redundancies, and they'd look upon the seller to deal with those ahead of them acquiring. So before they acquire that company, they'd want to make sure that they acquire the company absent those positions so that they could fulfill them themselves. Otherwise, if they were to acquire the company and then deal with the redundancies, it'd be additional cost for the purchaser to bear. So lots of considerations to take into account. And likewise, the same in relation to any premises that they occupy under a lease or a license, whether that's still required post-completion, i.e. can the purchaser rehouse everyone? Do they still need that additional storage or office space to carry on this operation? So as I said, a whole host of things need to be taken into consideration, and then a sort of cost benefit to that, to see where we are with it.
And then there'll also be like lots of disclosure and inquiries raised into some of the key elements of what the business is doing. Is there any liabilities? So basically, buyer would want to do a full host of due diligence exercises to make sure they're well and protected when it comes to acquiring the business.
Yeah, absolutely. So due diligence is a very, very key stage. It's an initial stage, just after the sort of heads of terms, for provisional heads of terms. So when the seller discloses information, they anonymize some of the data, redact some of the data. So they'll show what the sales are, breakdown of sales, perhaps to countries or regions or types of products or services, but they won't disclose the key clients in relation to that, what the percentage makeup is, until much later. And then it's enough to sort of provide to a prospective purchaser, whet their appetite, get them to sort of look at an overview of the business and how well it's doing and what the potential areas are, what the pricing is, what services they're strong at, what they're weak at, and then a complete and utter breakdown of the business. Look at the employees, what employees, key positions, holidays, salary, other benefits and entitlements, then look at the premises, whether it's a lease or license, how long the term is, what's the situation with dilapidations, what's, you know, the situation with parking, is there a break clause, is there an opportunity to expand or contract from the premises, then look at contracts, who we're in contracts with, what are the key terms, are there any break clauses, any opportunity to up the prices, any opportunities to upsell. So that, you know, just as an example, those are two, three key areas that we've looked at. But given a business and the industry that they're in, there'd be a whole host of other things. So for example, if they're regulated by any third party, when are they, is there a yearly audit, anything picked up on audit with regards to that, anything that they can improve on, any legislation in the horizon that would require them to modify or update what they're doing in order to comply. So a whole host of things, but a really, really key stage is the due diligence, because anything that arrives from due diligence, all the plus things help to assure the prospective purchaser of the business. But anything negative, they're going to want some comfort. That comfort usually comes in the form of a warranty from the seller in respect to that, and or potentially an indemnity from the seller to say, hey, if that was to crop up, I'm indemnifying you, I'm protecting you, I'm willing to pay for the cost of putting that matter right. That's how confident I am. So really, really key thing, due diligence, and what stems from it afterwards.
And then they would ideally be set out in the contract itself as well to cover the warranties and indemnities that the seller provides to the buyer.
Absolutely. So the warranties and indemnity in one of those contracts is perhaps one of the most important and most significant areas for any prospective seller to consider and to agree to. And with regards to any sort of warranty or indemnity provided, it's always a limited warranty or an indemnity to a specific point, and it's limited in terms of the amount of money on offer, the time and duration and the procedure to follow to sort of deal with that aspect. So yeah, absolutely key. And we deal with, in the main, so many of these on a monthly basis that we've got our sort of hands in very many industries. And certainly when we started off doing buying and selling businesses generally at Lauditz Listers, we were dealing with mainly online businesses. So mainly online businesses, businesses with a limited sort of physical presence, but a huge online presence, and businesses with a slant, an advantage in terms of the IP and digital assets they held, as opposed to a lease that they're occupying on on the building and the physical aspects of it.
Also, there'll also be agreements in place if the company's operating in a different country, so there'll be different areas of law that I'd assume need to be looked into. So how do you go about that, say if someone's acquiring something in America or Canada, for example?
Okay, so again, it'd be picked up in due diligence. They'd look at sales, for example, of the product or service in different regions. The buyers would want access to the contracts and whether they are under the UK jurisdiction or if they are in the US, for example. They'd want a key concern would be data and personal data, the handling of it, whether or not the US provisions will apply, and some form of warranty to say that there's been no breach of any laws in the US in providing that product or service. We do have a network of lawyers we use. We've got an in-house US attorney as well at Laudit Solicitors, and through her help and guidance, anything that she needs guidance on, we can utilize lawyers abroad and ask them to provide any sort of additional information or input on any given thing. But yeah, I mean, it's a key area for any prospective purchaser, not just US, for example, but any overseas area where the company's trading in and they've got active clients, they've got payments coming in, or they're dealing with data out there or products or services, to be able to satisfy themselves that the level of exposure will be limited or hopefully non-existent for them upon acquiring the company.
Obviously, at a later date, we can get a contract and run through all of the key kind of clauses that are in there. But for now, I think this kind of covers the key elements and the key things that's required for an asset sale purchase.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I think over the coming months, what we'll do is we'll pick one or two industries and IP dominant clients that are working in that industry, and then we'll run through a typical, say, an asset purchase or sale, and then a share sale or purchase, and then run through it that way. And perhaps an idea to get on board some of the partner companies we work with to provide a bit of an oversight as from the accounting and tax point as well. So yeah, very much look forward to it.
Yeah, so thank you for listening, and please feel free to contact us if you have any questions or you're looking to buy or sell a business.
Thank you.
Thank you.